Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Everybody, everybody, welcome to This Life with Bob Forrest and Dr. Drew. Hey, man.
Here we are.
Here we are. This is our maiden journey. We decided to do this for many different reasons. Before we get into that, let me just give a bunch of business. You can go to drdrew.com and submit email questions for us. We will be answering them here. We can also get back to you via Skype and put you on this program, and Bob and I can interact with you if you have any other questions. If you like this, be sure to show a little juju and spread the word. That's the only way this thing's going to have any survival, is if you guys want this to survive.
That's what I've learned. Everything is word of mouth. All this stuff about digital media, it's all word of mouth. When a friend tells me to go see that Benicio del Toro movie,
which
you should go. Great.
Which one?
I can't say the name of Sinari. What is it?
I don't know.
Where he's a hitman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So people tell me, go see it. I went and saw it.
It was good.
I didn't need...
I didn't need social media to tell me that.
So
Bob and I were talking that we just thought this would be an interesting thing to do. People seem interested in us and things we've done together, and let's just hang out.
28 years.
Yeah, we'll start with that. the people that don't, if you don't know, Bob Forrest has a documentary about his life out called Bob and the Monster, and in there, the documentarian pulled out a I don't know where the hell she found this.
I think kids used to tape your radio show on cassette.
Well, how the hell,
put out a thing on the internet.
Oh, my God.
And got a copy of it on a cassette.
And on the cassette, you're wasted.
Yeah. I'm giving good advice.
No. What I heard was sincere and connected advice, which when you're loaded to be connected like that was astonishing to me.
I was just drinking. I wasn't doing drugs.
Okay.
That was my MO coming out of rehab.
Just drinking.
Just drinking.
But you still had a lot of chaos in your life too. I remember
always.
And I said in this tape, is like he gives some heartfelt advice to us. And I said, you know, if you get your shit together, you'd make a great therapist one day. And that was 28 years ago. By the way, a year later, announced Bob Forrest's dead, everybody.
I know when that was too. That was like 3 years later when I came down to beat up the guy that was having people have sex with his wife. Do you remember that old guy?
What?
I was going to beat the guy up. He was on your show saying, like, free love. Do you remember this?
That kind of BS would show up once in a while. Yeah. By the way, that's becoming mainstream now, so watch out. So you were out of control. You'd come on the show. When you would come on, we couldn't even keep you in the studio. You kept running out.
I had to go to the bathroom. I had to go to my car.
Yeah.
That's drugs.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
Parents at home don't know that. Yeah, if they need to repeatedly go to their car all the time, something's going on.
Yeah, any repeated bizarre anything or nonsensical anything. And I just said, look, we got to not have this guy around because it's going to be a tragedy. He's dead. Just let's mourn him now. There's no way he's going to survive this illness. In fact, I think he's got AIDS. He's doing IV drugs. In fact, in Bob and the Monster, there's one of your bottoms was where you shared a needle with a guy that has AIDS.
Yeah, and I was scared that I had it. I felt like I had it. I looked like I had it, but fortunately I didn't. Yeah. I don't know why. But and then people started thinking I had AIDS, and I knew that was this is horrible, but this is how low junkies will go. I encouraged them to believe that because then they would loan me money.
Oh, perfect.
How great is that?
That's awesome.
You know,
that's so a good piece of the story.
I feel like I was the drug addicts that are alive today, that are full on using today, the kids that we deal with.
Yeah.
Like I have a kinship with them because I was like that 30 years ago.
There was
no shame in begging and manipulating and lying. You know, there was when I went to rehab the first time, it was like lawyers and doctors and Walter Yetnikoff and like normal people.
Yeah.
And then there was me.
Yeah.
Right. Nowadays, it's all me's.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And worse than you's. You know what I mean? And we will address what we mean by that as we go, you know, to do this podcast. You'll get a sense of what we're seeing these days. We're also going to come back and hopefully revisit some of our previous treatment cases. People have done well. People have not done well.
Everybody knows about the ones that haven't done well, but they've never heard about the ones that have done well. Jason Waller and Amber.
Jennifer Ketchum.
Yeah.
Lots of them. Lots of them. And some of them sort of are trundling along. They're okay. They're better.
I think they're always better for having been through it.
Yeah. It changes things. And then those that died of, people are beginning to understand now that people die of this illness.
Constantly. It's frightening. You know, 47,000 this year.
Yeah.
Gonna die.
Yeah.
That number used to be like 3,000 in the 80s.
But I think people think that somehow those are people that weren't treated or something. Those are most.
That's the new rumor.
Most of them got treated.
All of them have access to care. They don't want access to care. I'll give you an example.
Or they were treated.
The other day, a homeless 21-year-old girl who's going out with a guy that I've been treating or whatever, she wanted to talk with me. She wanted detox. I said, well, she had no money, no health care, no nothing. And she's homeless, staying on somebody's couch out in Pasadena or San Gabriel.
What? And she's not homeless. That's how a junkie looks at it. I got a place to stay.
Well, but then when I said the county beds that are available that I can help you get, like CryHelp, Impact, down in Orange County, Jason Waller has a lot of connections, Stanton Recovery, they want you to sign up all in. 3 to 6 months, really do this. And of course, the girl's like, I don't want to go for
away.
That long.
Yeah, I just want to detox. Yeah. Right? Yeah. And that whenever when you and I are accustomed to hearing people say, I don't want to, or the patient determines how the care is going to go, you immediately know it's not going to work. Immediately.
And that's what treatment has become, is patient-driven care, almost like the hospitality industry, like a hotel.
But before we lose you, we also just want to talk not just about treatment and drug addiction and mental health, but also just about what we
life.
Think. Yeah, what's
empty
going on?
Empty nest. Having a five-year-old when you're 50. Let's talk about it all.
That's brutal, by the way. Let's talk about that.
Oh, my God.
I couldn't do that.
You know, his name is Elvis, and a lot of people that follow me know about him because he's, you know, Facebook hero. He was going to this hippie school where everybody was kind of, you know, that hippie. You have one out here in Pasadena. Now he's going to regular public school. Within 2 weeks, he wanted his haircut to fit in.
Oh, wow.
Within a month, he's addicted to video games.
Oh, wow.
He needs to have the gold Star Wars ninja guy. You just see this peer-driven influence. And I see it. It starts at 5, I guess, in kindergarten.
Oh, wait till
and
12.
It just goes all the way through to what rehabs they want to go to. It's all because I'm, you know, I have antisocial personality
and antisocial traits.
I've always gone against whatever anybody said. So to see it in your kid, like, well, no, you don't have to have the gold ninja.
Fight against it. It's the man. The gold ninja is the man.
It is the man.
As opposed, don't you get any delight, though, in seeing them have joy and all the stuff that's out there? Yeah. I mean, but some of it is consumerism, but there's still joy in your kids' eyes when they're messing around with Pokemon or whatever the hell.
Yeah. Was that your era of Pokemon?
I'm going to make you go in and look at the wall in this bedroom over here. This is Playroom Podcast. This is the brainchild of Susan Pinsky, who's sitting at the control board right now. Sign in here, Susan. Say hi. She has a podcast.
Playroom Pods.
She started her podcast out here, calling out with Susan Pinsky, and she was like, "That Bob, you got to do something with that Bob." I'm to hang out. Perfect. But on the other side, there is all the Pokemon on framed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you'll enjoy.
No, right now it's those little blue guys, the hitchhiker from Haunted Mansion. He loves the Haunted Mansion.
He's Disneyland.
Obsessed
with
it.
Oh, good.
There are three hitchhiker ghosts, right?
Yeah, three of them. Yeah. And he sings the song with the little action figures that he has of them.
When you hear a bell, bell.
So that's my life.
The place where spirits dwell.
At a time when I should be closing in on retirement, that's what I'm doing.
Start to sing at harmonize.
You know all the words.
Pathetic. That's how many times I've been to Disneyland.
No, but we've gone, and all he wants to go to on that. And
Grim, gritty ghost, come out to socialize.
That's it. They still have it down there. They still have it down there 20 years later.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I talked to one of the Disney engineers. I forget who I was talking to, but he was saying that they could redo the whole thing and make it super cool with modern technology. But there's all these guys like us that went there when we were kids. We want to, you know, have our kids exposed to the old school elements.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Hatbox Ghost.
Whatever it is, just that weird animatronic stuff that we thought
was
cool.
So about 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago, Elvis wanted to go to Disneyland. His birthday was coming up. I took him down there. He only wanted to go in the Haunted Mansion. For 5 hours, we just went on it.
Wow.
Turned around and got the end of the line and went back through it.
That's impressive.
That's also obsessive compulsive disorder,
isn't
it?
That's drug addict shit, isn't it? Is that a little bit?
Yeah.
little bit. I'm just saying. So now, one of the interesting things about that genetic potential, which, you know, is what it is, and you know, I'll in one of these pods go through my whole thing about this, how I believe it's a evolutionary advantage to be a drug addict.
It is.
So I don't want to get into this, you know, our first podcast, but I'm of the opinion that the gene for addiction has it's a gene that evolved in nature and carried significant evolutionary advantages that carry this liability.
Can we just
with
talk
it.
About some of the great human beings that have had it?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, it's almost every figure of
Van
history.
Van Gogh.
Yeah, almost every figure. And you sprinkle a little bipolar and you got the whole thing. you got the historical figure now.
So how can we help people maximize the
utility
benefits?
Of it? Yeah. How can, well, so I was talking about, we're saying Elvis and his obsessiveness, which I'm a little OCD myself. And how do we get it not to express the genetic potential for addiction in him?
Well, right. I see that he knows words that are beyond a 5-year-old's words because of his obsession with songs,
right.
With stories.
Right, his focus.
Right.
But how do we get that not to become addict at 18?
Well, isn't all of our big business in Wall Street driven by those types of personalities? So they just
sure.
go, and they don't get sidetracked by drugs.
No. But I'm asking you, what are the elements we can bring in to protect Elvis from expressing that gene in a negative way?
Mm-hmm. Well, with
you
my
know
older,
what the answer to that
what,
is.
What?
Well, no trauma. And if there is trauma,
oh, yeah.
you treat
oh, the,
it.
Oh, they're just the ingredients.
Yeah.
I get it.
And number two, attachment. Deep, intimate attachment. Those are the attachment, and you and I across this pod will talk about this in great detail. Not today, but as we go along.
But attachment, see, because parents at home will think, well, my daughter is my best friend, so
no,
why?
No,
see,
no.
That's not attachment.
You know what?
That's a meshment.
You know what?
There's a big difference.
We got to get Dan Siegel in here to do a podcast with
us. Oh, that'd be great.
About attachment. And then Alan Shore and stuff. We'll get the real deal in here.
Yeah. Because that's what I believe. I believe that somehow I attach.
You'll freak
to,
out. I'm going to send you an email with some lectures.
How people ask me all the time, how'd you get sober? Anthony was sober.
Anthony Kiedis.
Right?
Yeah.
He's my best friend.
Yep.
I met Gloria Scott, a woman he knew, who he knew would click with me, right?
Because.
Buddy Arnold.
Oh, yeah.
These are people I attach to just in immediately. That connection is still what drives the whole thing today, my sobriety today. What, you know what I mean?
We,
like
and
a,
you,
like
the
a
thing
cool
is,
old uncle that you never forget.
What's the matter? I'm emailing him the lectures I want him to listen to for the next podcast.
Alan Shore.
Yeah, Alan Shore, Dan Siegel. It's done. It's on his email now. Get on the mic if you're going to talk to us. You can't talk to us outside the mic. She's yelling at me because I just emailed.
I know.
But
she has
Susan,
her mic turned off.
What's the problem?
Leave it on the whole time.
What's the problem?
In the middle of the podcast, he picks up his phone and he starts texting.
No.
Okay, now I know why Adam Crowley gets so mad at you.
Emailing. No, emailed him these lectures I want him to hear.
Just tell me to write
it
down.
Have you been to Love Lines
just
lately?
Just tell me to write it down and I'll make sure you
How
do it
How long
after?
Has it been since you've been down to Love Lines? Him and Mike just sit there looking at their phones the whole time.
No, and
Mike's looking at his computer.
No.
He picks the computer out. I at least am looking at what people are saying on social media about the conversation we're having. He's shopping. I'm not kidding.
Okay. Or,
he's looking
or
for
clothes. Sending
clothes.
Cars.
No,
or sending
bad.
Dick pics.
Yeah.
Okay. So we need to take our guest.
Hey, welcome back. So now, Bob, you're going to introduce your friend, your
Yeah, this is my friend Wait. Joel. He's written a book. He has a passion for the drug laws and prison incarceration of addicts and a big advocate for it.
Tell us about the book, Joel.
Yeah.
Right now it's on Amazon and Kindle. It'll soon be in all the Barnes & Noble's bookstores. The name of the book is Letters from Marion, A Deadhead's Journey from Peace to a Supermax Prison.
Nice.
You know about Marion Prison?
It's
the worst prison in America.
How'd you end up there?
Well, the
LSD.
The short answer is there was some racist drug laws that were changed. Well, there were drug laws that were changed that the Sentencing Commission changed in 1995 that opposed blacks and favored whites. The LSD law, the methamphetamine law, and the marijuana law. And then they proposed to change the crack law. And at that time, 10 prisons simultaneously rioted. The prison I was at was the initial one to riot. And then as a result of that, me along with 21 other black defendants were charged with starting the riots and then sent to Marion because of that.
Wait, I'm a little confused. Were you already in prison?
Yeah.
Yes.
What were you?
I was a first-time nonviolent offender. I traveled the world with the Grateful Dead selling LSD. Was indicted. I lost my jury trial and then was sent to prison for 151 months. Talladega, where the riots occurred, was my fifth prison.
Why so many prisons?
Most of the time, I just didn't adjust well, and I got into trouble. I sold heroin in three different federal prisons. Before I went to prison, I stopped selling drugs. I didn't want to go to prison, and then I was indicted for something that happened 2 years prior.
Wow. So how – now, I'm going to use a word – that Bob's used to describe himself. How do you contain all those antisocial impulses now?
For me, prayer and meditation is a big part of it, and just the power of choice and keeping my life busy, filled, being of service to others.
He
works at the Mission downtown.
Wow. That's a big change, huh?
Yes, it is. It's a big change. It is.
So I want to get a little deeper into your story, if you don't mind, and then get into the insanity of our laws.
Okay.
He's the poster child. He's a middle class white kid who liked the Dead.
Yeah.
Got into drugs because he's became an addict.
Yeah.
Covering his costs, dealing acid to cover his drug dependencies.
What was your childhood like?
My childhood?
Yeah.
That's subjective at best. I mean, my parents did try to do the best they could. My book's pretty graphic with some of the stuff that's happened in my childhood. I think I was raised lower middle class. My parents fought a lot. The discipline was really heavy.
Yeah, I was just listening to a lecture on kids that behave like you did. They had 44 of these kids they were studying going forward. And they all got into similar stuff to what Joel did. And of the 44, 42 had profound trauma in childhood. And the other two probably had it, just couldn't identify it. So it's, this is when, people have trauma and their attachments are ruptured. Who can you trust except yourself?
You can trust the Dead.
The Grateful Dead. Jerry Garcia. Trust Jerry Garcia.
I talk about that the first Dead show I went to because everybody treated me like family and it was just amazing social
experience. Oh, you found a family. Yes. You found a family.
That's what the Dead was.
Got it.
And the Dead had their own rules, except for those rules in the parking lot didn't apply to our society.
Isn't that how people join gangs? It's the same deal. It's how people end up in the mafia and gangs and shit.
Yeah, you feel part of.
Yeah. So anyway, so you end up in prison with an insane because you were a distributor, right? That's why you got the big penalty.
Well, I never was caught with any drugs. I did sell all the drugs. I did everything they said.
they just didn't catch me.
It was a relatively small amount of drugs per se, and
he had done way worse things than you get caught for. I know. Me too, Joel.
So that's one level of insanity, is it nonviolent offenders who are just drug addicts.
Yeah.
And the marijuana piece you mentioned in passing is part of the reason there's so many African Americans, so many black guys in prison. They changed the laws.
He knows people in jail for life for drug possession and drug dealing. For life.
Yeah. Three strikes.
It's insane.
Right?
Yes. Timothy Tyler, double life for LSD, very similar case to mine. He pled guilty for 10 years, and then at sentencing, they said, nope, we have three strikes, and he's doing double life. He's on his 24th year right now.
Wow.
So America is waking up to this, right?
Yeah, and I think black America is too, or at least people who represent black America are starting to talk about that law that you guys rioted for. Tell us about that law.
So the Sentencing Commission is comprised of nonpartisan and six people. Some are senators, some are, I kind of want to say something that's not true. And what they change, the methamphetamine law, the marijuana law, and the LSD law affect predominantly white defendants. And they decided to make a change on these three laws.
These are federal laws.
federal laws that lessened the sentencing impact. And as a change of that law, 30 months was taken off my sentence. Now, if Congress didn't act at the time, after a certain period of time, their change became law. The crack sentences, the good people at FAM fought for all of these, Families Against Mandatory Minimums, headed by Julie Stewart. Then they voted on the crack law, which basically said we're going to treat crack the same as cocaine because it's technically the same drug. But in fact, powder cocaine, you can buy a kilo of powder cocaine and make it into a kilo and a half of crack cocaine. But the people in prison for crack were predominantly black. And if you look at the minutes from Congress, the way that they refer to these violent offenders and that we can't change these laws because these terrible, bad people.
So they didn't change the black law.
They didn't say it about the LSD, the methamphetamine, or the marijuana law, which I can go into detail how they changed those laws specifically. So then the day of the Million Man March, or the next day, Congress said, no, we're not going to allow
change
the sentence.
The crack cocaine over minimum mandatory.
So
they wanted to make it equal because it was 100 times worse. So if somebody got pulled over with 5 grams of crack, there's a scale that you look at the sentences. It was equal to getting busted with 500 kilograms of powder cocaine, which is insane.
That's insane.
Yeah. That's why we have this crowded prison population. Laws and these ridiculous rules.
So, Joel, what is the answer?
I believe all drugs should become legal.
There you go. That's simple enough.
Now, Bob had some concerns about that, and it harkens back to our experience with the closure of state hospitals.
Yeah, and Joel, you and I have talked about this, and we've had some heated debates, and I.
Listen,
and
I think
it's going to happen, what he's saying.
No, I don't think so. People
decriminalization.
Are too,
no,
people,
decriminalization.
People are too moralizing. There's no way. But so you have an article.
There's a couple articles on my website. One is the reason why, because making drugs illegal or even decriminalizing hasn't worked. The drugs have permeated even inside our federal prisons. So how is that an answer to this problem? It hasn't worked. And access to drugs in prison is so easy. And there's no, this is another point, there's no real education. They removed Pell Grants in 1994.
Joel?
Yes.
Do you chronicle the history of how these laws evolved around the turn of the century?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, good. That's an important piece for people to know because they're very
racist.
Racist, arbitrary, super racist. That was sort of their intent. Racist, arbitrary, capricious, and they've served as the foundation for these laws to this day.
The war on drugs.
Yes.
Yeah, so but I think people would be surprised that you and I are sympathetic to Joel's point of view. We don't necessarily buy it whole hog, but
treatment over incarceration, and the reason why he and I are so like minded are on some
you're both
common
antisocial.
Footing.
That's what
well, that's part of it, our trauma histories. But in fact, the minimum mandatories are even the DAs don't like them.
No, it doesn't work. I agree with Joel. It does not work. It's sort of silly. It's weird. It's weirdly moralistic, and it doesn't. It flies in the face of science, which is what we know about the human relationship with substances, and we could do a much better job, much better job. But I do. Let's look at the legalization of marijuana in Colorado.
It's coming here to California.
Coming, absolutely. If people want it, they should have it. That's fine. But it's not been good health wise. The Colorado situation has been pretty nasty.
Well,
now,
the price hasn't come down. One of the Joel's and his side of the argument is the price is going to come down. I haven't seen the price come down, not at your local clinic. Do you understand? So the profit is still there.
It's right, because it's still a capitalist endeavor.
Yeah, that's what I said, Joel. Remember I said, if you can charge $60 an eighth, you're not going to go, you know what?
Yeah.
I like you. I'm going to give it to you for
$40
an eighth.
I think Joel would say once you get enough competition in there, that will drive price down.
Also, but even if the price stays high, why don't we use that greed and say, okay, that's more money that we can tax and put a special law in.
Yeah, I agree.
Treatment.
But do you trust the government to
I don't.
To
that's my biggest
drug treatment.
That's my biggest concern. Whenever they've enacted these drug treatment laws, they've been so inadequate that they might as well not have put them in place. And then they start having mandatory elements in them that are, again, worthless and meaningless. And so it just never works when it's a bureaucratic system. That's my
So the idea, in an idealized place, all these prisons, this military and this criminal prison industrial complex we have would be converted, at least I would say half of them. If half the people in prison are drug addicts, then half the prisons should be converted to drug treatment programs. Right.
Yes, but the prisons are a cesspool and a crime school. The stuff that you learn inside
a crime school. I like that.
There's nothing in there. And the first prison I was at, I was accepted for Pell Grants, and 4 months later they rejected me. I stopped selling drugs before I went to prison. So then I made some bad choices. I said, okay, I'm in prison for 13 more years. I got in trouble to go to a more secure prison because there were drugs there, and I wanted to get smoke weed every day, and hence the first prison I went to, it's in my book, the first guy I met my bunk neighbor pulled out an ounce of marijuana. He said, what are you in
for? The
I
prison
said, yeah, oh no. I know this. I think then pot was, and heroin's in there, there's all kinds of stuff in there. It's amazing.
It was shocking. So I think that's clear that our laws haven't worked. We all agree on that, and the hope is that the legalization will in the long term, and there's going to be growing pains. We're going to have more money to treat the addicts, identify the addicts, but also we're going to take the criminal element out. Half of the 2.5 million people in prison are for drugs. And in the last 5 years, as high as a 77% recidivism rate, and over
is
half
drug related.
Of course.
Is drug related.
Of course, they're not treated. All right, Joel, listen, I'm going to let you go. Bob and I are going to sit and chew on this. Everyone should get the book.
Thanks
Letters
so
from
much.
Marriage. Thank you for joining us on the website.
JoelBlazer.com or lettersfrommarion.com. Thank you so much, Dr. Drew, Bob, and Susan.
You got it. Thanks, Joel. Well, no doubt we'll talk to you more as time goes on. So just
as soon as this marijuana gets legal in California.
Yeah.
Is that right, November?
I'm sure it'll happen soon.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
Thanks, Joel.
So there you go.
So you finish out what you were saying about your model of this being like the moving people out of the state.
But I'm kind of taken aback that you don't think it's going to be decriminalized. Marijuana certainly is.
Yeah.
Next to come is obviously prescription drugs are already legal.
Which is insane. That's the insane part. The one that's doing the most damage right now already is legal. Yeah. But it's just, you know, I could see a world in which, and this would be more sane than what Joel's talking about. And this sounds crazy, but a world where doctors distributed stuff.
They do in England, right?
There are parts of the world where little rests do it. And then you could monitor and shape. And if a patient wants treatment, bring them into treatment. They do this with alcohol. They have places where people come in, their house, drinking houses. They're allowed to come in and drink all they want. And doctors monitor them. And they try to develop they do a lot of motivational work, try to motivate them to want to stop. And so if somebody doesn't want to stop, you're not going to convince them to stop. So at least if you have control of a distribution, I can imagine a world where doctors thought clinically in terms of, well, how much heroin do you allow this guy a week? How much cocaine do you allow him a week? What's dangerous? And then how do you motivate them to
get back into
treatment?
See, to me, we're already, heroin's already legal. It's called OxyContin.
But doctors are irrational with how they do it. They get them hooked. And then they cut them off and then they're shocked when they go to heroin.
Yeah.
That's
they're
how
bad
it works.
Patients.
That's
but,
how it works.
But I don't see ever a complete social acceptance of stimulants as a you know, cocaine or methamphetamine. I think that's where it carves out. But I can see where heroin is have methadone clinics.
Listen, do you watch The Nick?
No, I don't.
Oh, my God. But you have to. Bob.
Soderbergh.
Bob.
Yeah.
It's a signed viewing for you. It's about physician, about a surgeon at the turn of the century. And
I know what it's
cinema.
About. Yeah, no, I
and
know.
And the guy who's played by Clive Owen is a severe cocaine and opiate addict. Severe. He finally spins out, becomes manic, becomes psychotic, completely spins. He's also a sex addict. And they take him to a place. They shame him.
Mental hospital.
No, it's a drug treatment center, and a lot of familiar language and approach that we would
well,
recognize.
That's made up. That wasn't from then.
But it's just. I swear to God, this show is so fucking accurate. It's unbelievable. I'm telling you, it's the beginning of what we know as drug treatment because it wasn't really. There was no 12 step or anything like that. It just kind of the approach.
Well, Jung was involved in AA,
but I mean, you would know how if somebody was dealing with drug addicts all the time, they'd have a certain approach. You know what I mean?
Particular
ones that are coming in crashed. You may not know what to do really, and the doctor goes, "Oh yeah, you're in a cocaine psychosis. We deal with this all the time. It's a terrible problem." We now have a wonderful treatment for detox and maybe a way to treat cocaine addiction. I'm going to give you the, within 5 minutes, you'll feel so much better. He injects him, and you see Clavo just go, oh, my God, lie down
what
to sleep in bed.
What is it?
They pull back, and I'm screaming. I know what it is.
What?
Heroin.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay? And then the next thing out of my mouth is, we are still doing that today. Everyone's outraged because it's heroin. It doesn't matter that it's heroin, whether it's methadone or Suboxone or whatever. That's the same idea. It's the same phenomenon, yeah. Which is we're going to give you an addictive drug to treat an addictive drug. Now, I will grant you Suboxone is a lot better. It's a significant advancement in all this, but it's the same philosophy, mm-hmm. Same idea. We're going to give a drug addict a drug, which is,
and
I
then
know,
in our 21st century world, and they're going to hold it and take it as prescribed.
Oh, but anyway, we're going to
we got to talk about our night in New York City, because something happened there that I thought about for all this time, and that is when they asked us all to leave the cookie place. That would never happen in L.A. Never. That is
really
so quintessential
you.
New York.
I know.
Like, I don't give a fuck who you are. Get out of here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they greeted us. They knew who we were. They were so taken that we were in their little cookie shop. And then they were like,
9 o'clock. You got to get out.
Yeah. They were like, well, we're closed. So thank you, guys. Move along.
Dude, in L.A., they would just stay open.
I know.
I'm born and raised here.
Yeah.
A little taken aback by that.
Well, part now, let's be fair. That was in deep end while we were in Soho. Or
we saw Aziz and
we were in the village. We were in the village. Yeah. And they have an embarrassment of riches there with people walking into places because the foot traffic there is so massive. You know what I mean? If they just allowed people to kind of, first of all, they don't care because they got plenty of traffic. Secondly, if they let people just kind of come on in, they'd have a crowd standing outside. They're like, why are these guys?
They never close.
You know, New Yorkers like, those dudes are in there. Why don't we? We want to come in too. Oh, here's somebody.
There you go, Tracy.
Tracy, is that you?
Hey, hey.
Yep, that's
there
me.
You are.
Hey there.
Howdy, howdy.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us. Tracy, I'm reading your email here. She emailed us at doctor.com, mm-hmm. And then we Skype her back. She has some questions wanted to discuss with us. Let's have at it. Go ahead.
Yeah, have a family member. It's actually my new son-in-law that's he's doing moderation management with zero drug use as part of the moderation management program.
Slow down. Where is he, at UCLA or is he treated? Where is he?
No, he's not in a program. I mean, he's doing it on his own.
But is he going to the...
Let's be clear. Moderation management is a very intensive treatment that you are seeing. You're doing lots of treatment when you're in moderation management.
But there's a post-support group for it.
I'm just saying, moderation management, if you're going to declare I'm doing moderation management, you are in a moderation management program with psychiatry, okay. With therapist, with...
I know, you're supposed to go through that, and then they have these almost like 12-step support groups afterwards. So he's going to that?
He did it all on his own. He's on moderation.
He's seen a therapist.
Okay.
He's seen a therapist, and my daughter is doing moderation management with a therapist, and she's going to AA and got a whole support group going. She's doing zero drinking. She doesn't have any drug issues. She's doing zero drinking.
Why are we calling that moderation management? That's just addiction treatment. That's alcohol.
Sobriety.
Yeah.
It's me misunderstanding.
Okay.
He's drinking and she's not.
Correct.
Yeah. Well,
and he's saying he's not going to do any drug use. And part of they got married 2 months ago, and part of the stipulation for getting married was she was like that he couldn't do any of that, and found out that he's been using DMT, which he claims isn't a drug.
Oh,
he says it's part of his spirituality. He's got a lot of his brother committed suicide 10 years ago, said that DMT is helping him reconnect with his dead brother. And
oh boy.
It sounds like a lot of addict talk.
It is. For sure. That's a kid in big trouble. I mean, somebody that is, that's somebody who's not only a drug addict, there's some psychiatric stuff.
Doesn't have closure about the brother. Yeah. There's so many things that strike right off the bat.
And the magical thinking about taking a drug and connecting.
I've been dealing
with
these clients lately.
With
the witch? The ayahuasca and this DMT.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that spiritual way, like I'm an open-minded guy. In that spiritual way, you're talking about once every 6 months they go to Costa Rica and do it. These kids are doing it 3 or 4 times a week here in Los Angeles.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's not a spiritual quest. That's addiction.
Yeah.
That's what there's pipes hidden everywhere. He's got DMT hidden all over the house.
Yeah, this is a crisis. This is a crisis right now.
She agreed to go through with the wedding.
Oof.
Because he said he wasn't using and found out after because he used it right before some friends came over to the house, and it's everywhere. And he's been willing to throw the marriage away until just this week. He said, well, I won't use it if it scares you.
It's the worst combination. And what I saw, and I don't mean to interrupt, but what I've seen is this worst combination of religion and active use.
Yeah.
It's, you know what I mean? Yeah, so my religion, I'm finding God, I'm finding this, I'm finding that.
DMT is very dangerous.
Okay, that's what we thought.
There will be psychiatric consequences if he uses a lot of it in terms of mood. All kinds of stuff can go wacky from these hallucinogens. This is somebody in profound need of treatment. This is really, I bet his addiction was far worse than you ever knew in terms of what he was actually doing when he was actively using. He will be back soon to actively using. You may have to wait for that to, you know, really get in on it and get in and treat him. But this is one of my fears about moderation management, is that they don't select, you know, the patients. I mean, here's your daughter who's an alcoholic and she's properly treating her alcoholism. Beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, here's a guy's a drug
What's
addict.
So hard about that? I know. What is so hard about that? That's the interesting thing.
Well, what's hard is alcoholics don't like to give up alcohol. That's what's hard. And they'd rather do a moderation.
No,
management.
But I mean, it's a pretty plain and simple black and white, right? There are other compulsive disorders and addictions that you still have to eat, even if you have an eating disorder.
I don't object to moderation management as an option for people early in the condition. I have no problem with that. But this is not a kid that in any way would be eligible for that sort of thing. What was his primary drug when he was...
Heroin, I'll bet.
Yeah, or an opiate or something.
I don't know much about his drug use. I know he was doing mushrooms before. I know he's done...
Well, it's pretty much the same thing.
I don't know what all he was doing. He's also got huge anger issues. He's lost his parents... broke relationship with him when his brother killed himself. Oof. 10 years ago, because they blame him for, he was supposed to be watching the brother and the brother committed suicide.
Oh,
he's got a ton of pain. His dad's a medical doctor, and his dad was just admitted for bipolar delusion. He's having delusions and paranoia.
So
there's tons of mental illness in the family, and we're just worried that what does DMT do to psychiatric?
Sets it off.
It sets off bipolar big time.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and all that anger and irritability may be a manifestation of his bipolar too. But this is so complex. I mean, this is somebody that really needs treatment in the worst way.
That's what we think.
Yeah. I mean, this is really bad.
Well, he greatly respects you, Dr. Drew, and so he knows I'm doing this now. He didn't know it before, but he's learned since, and he's like, well, let's see what Dr. Drew says. And my daughter's like, well, we know what Dr. Drew says.
Well, in cases like this, what I usually do is send in Bob Forrest. because I'm a little too, you know.
Yeah, I'm Bob, sorry.
No. I mean, because I'm too clear and too black and white, and they don't want to hear that, of course. And
I like arguing. So I like, yeah, I imagine he's a big arguer about the spiritual path that he's on. And I don't mind arguing all day long.
He sent me so many articles to read. The only relationship.
Yeah, those are people that are using it once every 6 months. What do you think of that, Drew? Because there's a lot of stuff going on with the soldiers and wounded warriors.
Yes, there's places for this. There is. I am open-minded as you are, and there will be therapeutic uses for these kinds of things. We are way off from knowing where that is or how it should be used or what doses or anything. And DMT, I'm very doubtful, is going to be one of the ones that we actually use. I really am.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But be that as it may, the poor guy, he's got, maybe just focus on all the pain and all the psychiatric stuff. I mean, we start with that. He's got so much he can't tolerate. That's why he's using drugs. That's why he can't stop using drugs.
The DMT is the only thing that's giving him.
Well, it's shutting off his brain. He's being blamed by his bipolar father for the suicide of his brother.
Yeah.
That's like almost too much to carry.
Right. And so he's using drugs to blot that out. And so what you should tell him is
fuck your dad.
No. No.
He's broken off relationship with him.
Yeah.
He's broken off relationship.
Good. Yeah, good.
That's Bob's antisocial stuff. But it is.
That's what connects with the addict.
Right. I know. But that's why I have no ability in that when they get like this. But tell him that DMT is not if DMT were the treatment from what he is suffering from, I would advocate it strongly. It's not okay. the treatment. And although it may make him feel better, it's in the long run going to be very, very deleterious, very, in this okay. kind of situation. And I'm not saying, oh, I'm against hallucinogens, no one should ever. Duncan Trussell is a dear friend of mine, and he's a hallucinogen, you know, just like Joel, he's a hallucinogen advocate.
Yeah.
But in situations like this, this is a medical situation. This is really serious. And
okay.
I would dare say it feels to me that this kid's life may be in danger soon. It yeah. just feels like one of those situations that could really spiral bad. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it has been. He's just been, I mean, he's to the point where he's like, we're like, you're going to lose my daughter. You're going to lose all that you have is her. And now he's let me in. He's never known what love is like. He said that love terrifies him and
sure.
with people that love him for the first time in his life. So,
well, listen, that's what Bob and I preach all the time. We call it attachment, not love. And uh-huh. and it until they really, you're jumping ahead a little bit to attach to a non-addict. Someone who knows really what they're feeling is what they typically attach to first. But here, let me just say something about you. And Bob, okay. you back me up on this. You seem to have uncanny clarity
and
centeredness about all this. We deal with families and people around addicts all the time.
I've had addicts in my
family. I can tell. So I don't know if it's Al-Anon or whatever you've done, but trust your instincts, use your support network. You got it going on. You don't even need us to corroborate that. You're everything you've said has been spot on. Would you agree, Bob?
Perfect.
Yeah. Okay. You know,
just, what would you do if this were your?
You know, I it's so complex. I really don't think I could give you a prescription.
Okay.
Because I'd have to really evaluate him to understand where this is at. I would use whatever leverage you have to get him into treatment. That's clear.
Okay.
Did you say he has a therapist?
Yeah, he has a therapist.
I would get at that person and kick their ass.
I would
say, hey, we have talked to other physicians. They say this is a potential of a life-threatening situation. I want you to understand that we will hold you accountable if something happens to this kid. Okay?
Okay.
Put it in an email, put it in writing, do whatever you can to document that you are holding, that you want, that you want, hang on a second. You want consultation with a psychiatrist and addiction. And by the way, that scares us too, Bob and I, because there's so many bad, you know, doctors.
Is it a therapist he picked up along the way from drug and alcohol treatment? It seems like he must have been in treatment one time or another.
I don't know that he's ever been in treatment before, but it's a therapist that work. I think he got the therapist through they're seeing a marriage therapist, and my daughter's seeing a therapist, and I think they got this lady through those connections.
All right. That's good.
Experience supposedly.
I would hold the marriage therapist to the hand of the fire too. I would say, listen, you need addiction professionals. You need psychiatry. You need addiction professionals that can absorb some of this liability that we are going to hold you to until you do that.
Okay.
Because they'll understand that language. But listen, Tracy, thank you for, you know, letting us talk to you.
Yeah, that's heavy.
It's really intense.
Heavy stuff. And I won't forget that. The dad that blamed the other son for death of the son.
And I have to remind everybody that, you know, we're doing educational program here. This is not treatment.
Right.
You know, anybody that does call, we're just saying, you know, in cases like this, this is how we approach these things. That's why I can't give you specific advice, because this does require deep, serious evaluation.
They got three therapists.
Somebody's missing something somewhere, and I don't know why. And maybe it's just this kid's lack of
leverage.
Leverage
over him to be motivated.
But Tracy, thank you so much. Yeah. We got to say goodbye.
Hang in there.
Thank
you so much.
All right.
And you'll let us know what this is, what your new podcast is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's okay. Drew and Bob hanging out and talking, frankly.
It's called This Life.
Yeah. And we want to talk to people we don't have time to talk to most of the...
Just check out drdrew.com. It'll all be on there.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right, you got it. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, I get nervous giving being so explicit with what I'm talking about, because I literally feel like I want to go follow through, you know, I don't want to.
No, I know these kids. I deal with these kids. They believe in that stuff. It's crazy.
We have one more email. This woman could not Skype in. She couldn't figure out how to use her Skype, and she sends us an email. It says her name is, we'll call her Faye. I need help with my uncle to get better. He's addicted to ice. All the family wants to help. He has a good talent. He can pretty much fix any car transmission. He just helps. He just needs help getting back on track. This is not a simple matter. This is not a little cajoling. Hey, dude, you need to drop that ice and come and get with it. You're such a good transmission repairman. No. This is somebody who needs to go away for a while. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and just where it doesn't say where or what the situation is.
Ice is methamphetamine. It's a form of
high octane methamphetamine.
He will develop he must already have a psychosis. He'll develop an irritability and a preoccupation that people are thinking about him and talking about him. He'll be very angry all the time.
Take cars apart when they don't need taken
yes,
apart.
Yes, take things apart, put them back together, including like your television, because the television will start talking to him. and he needs really
hypersexuality,
super serious treatment. That is not just a little help getting back on track. Now,
let's explain exactly why that's so hard. Because the brain is so destroyed that when sober, that person feels
like they don't
exist.
Like they don't exist. And it requires psychiatric management. It requires addiction treatment. You can take him to Narcotics Anonymous. People do get better with that. Just that. He can sit there 3 times a day. But
if they're in L.A., take him to Las Encinas Hospital.
Yeah.
It's a good beginning.
Yeah. He's going to have to focus on his treatment for a while.
Oh, a long time.
And they will
not going to even feel like life is worth living for 6 months.
How do we help people understand how they do that? You know, people have to support themselves. People have families. How do they take that time? They don't feel like they have cancer, even though they have something just as dangerous.
At this point, if you're 18 to 34 and you have addiction, it's more deadly than cancer or car accidents.
But how do we get them still, when they don't feel that way, to take the time? I think we can convince most people to take 3 months these days, don't you think? Even though you and I both know
it's all such a limited access to care.
Yeah.
Care is another thing that's broken down. We're going to talk about this ongoing in different podcasts. Care is so focused on the 30-day model. You know what I mean?
Still.
Because that's all the big money's up front.
It has nothing to do with it. 30 days is worthless.
And you need to spread that money out over a year.
I'm going to get Amber Smith in here, too, when we treated both sex rehab and drug rehab. And she told me that she said for the first 2 years, she doesn't remember a goddamn thing. She remembers is me talking about emotions and her not knowing what the fuck that meant, having no idea what the hell that was. And that's the whole point. And when the brain is so injured and so protracted.
Benzos do that.
Lots of things do that. It's just slow recovery.
Well, here's a new thing. If you are a person of means in the United States, your expected price for 30 days in treatment in Florida and Malibu and Karen Foundation is about $50,000.
Karen too?
Yeah. If you took
that, Karen took Karen. Yeah. No. I thought it was free. Karen.
It's all.
Oh my God.
So between 34 and 60,000 is the average month stay. If you took that money and spread it out over 12 months, you could get high quality care.
Yep.
But the bed's not going to be that nice, and you're going to have a roommate. And you're not going to have, you know, I hate to say it, physicians waiting on your hand and foot.
Right.
You're going to have people who know how to deal with addiction all the way down the road.
Yeah.
And I always recommend that you get one case manager following the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I want to raise my occupation up to be more of a case management field rather than this step and fetch it for the rehab centers.
Well, that makes sense. All right. Are we about wrapped up here?
Okay, yeah. Bob, I want you to tell everybody where to go if they want
me
addiction help.
Oh, addiction help. So there's all these different websites you can go to, you know, and you can't trust them because they're all for-profit phone banks and centers. When you Google addiction, you're going to get a
referral system
for people that are wanting that money revenue. Yeah. So I'm associated with a rehab in Malibu called Acadia Malibu. You can call them at the 1-800 number. You can email them at acadiamalibu.com, and you'll know it's my rehab because I'm on the website.
I would also say that if you're outside the area and you're wondering what, you know, you're trying.
No, you can call for outside the area.
I'm just saying, though, if you have other, you want to stay, you know, anything run by Hazelton. Or associate with Hazelton, H-A-Z-E-L.
And Karen Foundation and Betty Ford,
and
all
Karen,
the big players.
Well, Betty Ford and Hazelton are now together.
Yeah.
So anything with Hazelton really tends to be high quality. So you can pretty much trust what's going on.
Well, anything that's, here's my thing in a nutshell. The back of your insurance card has a 1-800 number for mental health and addiction treatment.
Yeah.
call them. They have their in networks, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But when you're looking for treatment, look for nonprofit status treatment.
Oh, it's almost impossible, right?
No, Karen Foundation, Hazelden, not for profit.
Oh, good. All right.
Karen, Cry Help, Impact, all not for profit.
Right. All great places. Highest. Those are places we can refer to with great confidence.
But
great
be
confidence.
Careful. Be careful.
Yeah, it's sad what's
when
going on.
When you're out there Googling, be careful.
All right, so we will keep this thing going. We got a lot more you and I are going to chat about.
We got to talk
life.
About life. Aziz.
Yeah, this life with Bob Forrest and Dr. Drew, we could just, you know, maybe we'll just, yeah, we're going to be back fast. We'll be back before you know it. And I feel like we spent too much time on addiction this time. However, if you keep coming at us with calls and questions that are addict-related, we're naturally going to go there. But we want to talk about much more than that. We want to talk about everything.
Yeah.
All right, see you next time.
This is a real life. Oh, this is the only one you get. This does not repeat.